Here's the message. I'll give it to you very quickly. Proverbs 18:10. Do you know it? I don't see anybody with their hand up. William, you got this one? No, I didn't think so. Janice, you have this one? Proverbs 18:10? No. Julie, 18:10? No. And yet, some of you know it. Try this. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it, and they are saved. There it is. The name of the Lord. Just say it with me. The name of the Lord. Wait a minute. All together. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it. They are saved. Okay, let's try to put that all together. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it, and they are saved. Well, you just did something. You know what you just did? You just memorized Scripture. How many of you, well, that's the first time in a while you've tried to memorize Scripture. For some of us, it may have been a while, but there it is. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it, and they are saved. They are safe. Well, here's the real message of that. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. And what we're really being told is to come to the Lord. Indeed, the Lord is the one who dwells in the tower, who makes the tower. He is the one who towers over us. He is the one to whom we run. He is the one who is the meaning of life. So I want to take you then to a story about a tower. We're going to hear a little bit more about that. And this may not be the most edifying story in the world, or is it? Sherry, do we have the slides? I don't know about you, but when I look at cityscapes, whether I see photographs or whether I see them on television, or maybe you're looking at your computer and you see something online, but when you look at different skylines, especially at night, the nightscapes from up above, and you see the lights, or if perhaps you've been on a nighttime flight and you're flying in or out of New York City, taking off or landing, I mean, it's just mesmerizing to look at the view. And I still marvel at the things that human beings, human hands have been able to create. I find the technology just to be mesmerizing. So take a look at some of the towers as we see them. Towers from around the world, extraordinary accomplishments of different heights. Are you familiar with these towers? They made a movie about them. Sean Connery was in it years ago. And the Sears Tower, now renamed. I wonder if Craig has had a chance to see that one. The Yin Mao Tower. Do I pronounce that accurately? Did I get that right? Hong Kong? Oh, guess you know what that one is, right? That one's been around for like 100 years, hasn't it? How about this one? The Tower of Babel. Well, let me take you to the story about the Tower of Babel. As we think about accomplishments, I just want to read the story, make some comments as we go, and then some additional comments that may have some applicacy. I didn't say that carefully, did I? Some applicability, thank you, and some relevance to our lives. So here's the story. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. They all spoke in a way that they could easily understand. And as they migrated from the east, they came upon a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. This is what we would today call Babylonia, or you know what we would have called that, probably in Iraq. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks. They had a building project in mind. They wanted to manufacture and make something and burn them thoroughly. They learned that if they fired the bricks, they would be a lot stronger. And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. In other words, they were using something like asphalt for mortar. And then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves. So you get a sense that people are collaborating, working together to make something impressive. They're reaching for the skies, perhaps overreaching in the eyes of God. Otherwise, we shall be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. So there's an issue here, and you begin to catch perhaps what it is, where there's a little bit of friction, because you may remember that it was God who wanted them to multiply and fill the earth, to spread out and to fulfill his purpose. He had set them on earth to be his emissaries, to carry his image to all creation. We were supposed to care for the planet that God entrusted to us in his name. But the people wanted to stay together and protect themselves. So verse 5, the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which mortals had built. And the Lord said, look, they are one people, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Don't think for a moment that God is threatened by this. He's just commenting on the ability, because he's given them ability. Created as we were, as we are, in the image of God, we have extraordinary capacity to do amazing things. Verse 7, God says again, come, let us go down and confuse their language there so that they will not understand one another's speech. Well, thanks a lot, God. As if life on earth isn't difficult enough, now we have God collaborating or moving to make life a little more confusing. And so the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. They couldn't understand each other anymore. They were unable to communicate, so they had to stop their building project. Therefore, it was called Babel. And that's, of course, you can almost hear the cognate there, and certainly the word Babel means something to us, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. Babel simply means doorway or gateway to heaven, is apparently what it means. So they were trying to build up into the realm of God, to reach the heights that God reached. And so they were refused there, and God did it by confusing their languages, their tongues. Because the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. What do you think about that story? Perhaps we've heard that God is not the author of confusion. Want to bet? You read this story and you might think otherwise. So think with me for just a moment then. How many times have you ever heard or perhaps spoken these words to a child that was about to receive punishment? You know, this is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt you. And the child in every one of us cries out, then stop, you don't have to do this, not really. You don't need to do this. But we've all said or perhaps heard those words, this is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt you. And that might be the approach of God, who does indeed bring confusion and make things a lot more challenging. Now, if you have a child, if you have a daughter or a son who violates his or her curfew, and you decide to suspend their driving privileges for a time, you may suddenly discover now that you have to sacrifice, because if they have to get to practice, if they have to get to work or a dentist appointment, then your punishment, or that your punishment upon them, will suddenly become your sacrifice, right? Who's going to drive them if you take away driving privileges? So their punishment becomes a punishment for you. So I think there is some validity to that statement. This is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt you. Now imagine this scenario for a moment. Let's try another one. If you have a daughter and she's failed to call you, and you start to worry about her because she's 2 hours late coming home from school, and you don't know quite what to do, you can't reach her. You find out later that a friend of hers got sick, and there was no one for her to go home to, her friend, so your daughter decided just to wait with her friend until help would arrive to make sure that she wasn't alone and nothing bad happened to her. But she missed her own bus, your daughter did, and she didn't make it home, so you started to worry. Now, you may be proud of her for what she did, staying with her friend, expressing compassion and care, but you're also a little bit disappointed that she didn't contact you. She didn't call you, and so you worried about where she was. So, Mom and Dad, what are you going to do now? How are you going to handle that situation? Are you going to let it go? Are you going to give her a pass? Or are you going to take away her cell phone for a few days just so she remembers next time? Hey, next time when something comes up, I just want you to call me. But Mom, I was too busy. I just didn't think of it. Well, next time, maybe you'll remember. Mom and Dad, what are you going to do? And then we come to this story about God and the Tower of Babel. And I can almost hear God when he learns that humans have this great construction project. Ooh, look at that. They're going to build a new trade center. Isn't that something? They have a plan going on down there in the plains of Shinar in the land of Babylon. And I can almost hear God thinking in advance about what he will say. And I can almost hear the words on the lips of God. Hey, what are you all doing building a city? Why are you building a tower? This is not what I told you to do. Don't you remember what I said to you? Do you remember what God's command to them was? Be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. Spread out. Get going. You need to be there for my creation. You are my agents. You are my emissaries and representatives. You are my regents. Creation will suffer if you don't do what you need to do. I've given you my authority. I've given you my power. This is a privilege and an honor, but the rest of creation is waiting for you. They need you. Get going. But that's not the response of the human beings. You see, the problem really wasn't so much with the city. It wasn't even so much with that ridiculous high tower that they were trying to build. What was the problem? They didn't consult God. They didn't ask. They didn't seek him. They didn't include him. They didn't look for permission. They simply said, let's do this, or let's us. Let us do this together. They left God out of the equation, and that was the problem. It's we, the people, making a decision apart from God. They decided to do something with their own hands. And that's not a bad thing, doing things with their own hands, producing extraordinary things. The problem was that they trusted in their own wisdom and in their own technology. They didn't include God, and they didn't turn to him. And so instead of addressing their real fears, and what was their real fear? Well, now this is where it starts to get good. What was their real fear? I don't think the real problem was the fear that they would be scattered. The problem was that God had destroyed the earth. They didn't forget what God had done. He had eradicated the whole human race with the exception of Noah and his family. And so I think they were threatened by God. I think they were more than a little afraid of God. He did this once. He said he would never do it again, but God is unpredictable. We don't know what God will do. You can't domesticate this God. And so they decided that they would build a tower, of course without consulting God, a city to protect themselves. We're not going out there, no telling what God will do to us when we get out there by ourselves, scattered across the face of the earth, no telling what's going to happen. We remember how God evicted our ancestors, Adam and Eve. He put them out of the garden. He's the one who cursed the ground, or said, he released the curse. The ground is cursed because of you. Labor got a lot more difficult, whether you mean the labor of a woman in childbirth or the labor of men and women trying to earn a living by agriculture from the ground. It got a lot harder after that. And then there was the flood. God flooded the entire place. And if it weren't for just one righteous man, that would have been it. Everybody rubbed out and erased from the face of the earth. So they knew. God is more than a little bit scary. God is threatening. And they didn't know what to do except to try to avoid God, not bring God into their plans. And so they had this bunker mentality, I think, a fortress mentality. Well, we'll just do something, and I'm sure they must have guessed that God would figure it out in the fullness of time. But they decided to build a tower. Why did they do that? I have a hunch that they were trying to reach into the heavens, that they wanted to eavesdrop on God. If we just get the drop on God, if we listen in, if we're up there where God is and find out what God is up to, it will act for us like an early warning system. We won't be as threatened. Maybe we'll be able to do something to protect ourselves next time. And so they decided if they would cluster together for their protection, they might be able to resist or hold God at bay. And so they failed. Not only were they afraid of God, but they also failed to fulfill the will of God, as we just said. They didn't spread out. They didn't trust God to take care of them. they did trust that God might be an enemy of theirs, and so fear permeated and fear prevailed over them. What they did was actually avoid God's very direct and repeated command. They failed to fulfill his purpose for the world. And what they did was simply cross God off as an option. There's no help to be had from God. They were suspicious of God, and so they turned aside. They chose to go their own way and to consult one another, to work through their own devices. And so what did they do to address their fears? How did they do it? Well, they chose their own remedy, and they came up with a technological fix. And instead of seeking a dynamic relationship with a living God, who probably knew more about engineering than they ever would, who was the source of all engineering wisdom, they decided, well, why don't we build a tower? And my suspicion is that they actually hurt the feelings of God. You know, last week we did learn, as we looked at the flood, that God's feelings can certainly be hurt. God is responsive to what happens with his creation, and God grieved over what had happened. And so we understand that God has feelings that can be hurt. God has feelings too. He can be moved by what happens here on earth, for good or bad, for the positive or negative. And so after Adam and Eve had been rejected, or they felt like Adam and Eve had been rejected, I think people came together and they regrouped. And they came together to move on their own. Because what they realized is that things might not be so good with this God. They didn't know what to expect. And it bothered them. It scared them. Now, after Adam and Eve, I think God also regrouped. And one of the things that God did, and this is one of the powerful things that we've learned about God, is that God actually was good. After Adam and Eve, what was the problem? Well, the problem that God had to take care of, the reason he put them out of the garden, was so that they wouldn't live in their sinful state of shame for all eternity, separated from an intimate relationship with him. And so God brought death in. Actually, they brought death, but God used it to bring an end to sin. God had something in mind for them later on. We might call it resurrection. But in that moment, that was a favor to them and a blessing. It was as if to say to them, sin can only go this far, and then at death, it stops. You won't live in sin or shameful separation forever. So God was doing them a favor so that they wouldn't permanently be cut off from him. And so God never gave up on his creation. He never abandoned them. He found one righteous person. Because people's hearts were not changed, God grieved over them. We heard that story last week with the flood. And I really believe that the flood was the tears of God filling the earth. And yet the tears washed away. They washed the earth and they renewed it. Except that people, well, their hearts hadn't really changed. And so it was God, recognizing that people were apparently unable to change, it was God who changed his ways with his people and decided to do something different with them. And so we heard the two most important words I think you could ever want to find. God said, never again. Never again. Never again will I destroy them. And so God set his covenant, the sign of his covenant, the rainbow in the clouds to remind himself and us that he had said never again. So when we see storm clouds rising over the horizon and start to become anxious, and also see the rainbow, oh yes, God promised, never again. He wasn't going to destroy them. So why were they concerned then when God had commanded them to spread out? He's saying, never again. You don't need to be afraid. I'm not going to do this. It's okay. He tried to reassure them, but in spite of that, people withdrew in fear and came together and came up with a plan on their own apart from God. And they acted in pride and arrogance and self-sufficiency, trusting in their own technology. And so it soon led to folly and a little bit of mischief. What they did was hatch an alternative to God's own plan. And what we discover is that their technology might be somewhat lacking. What we find is that we have a God here who will not be mocked and a God who will not be thwarted. What we discover is that human language actually becomes the language of disobedience. And so what we discover is that God is looking at these silly people. I can just imagine God coming down saying, let's go down and see what they're doing. And he goes, oh, Look at that. They're building a tower. Remember when you were a child and you built things out of Tinker Toys or Legos? And they were pretty impressive. It's Legos today, I guess. Right, William? Today you build out of Legos, maybe. My age, we still had Tinker Toys and things like that. Those little erector sets. So they built this little tower, and God said, oh, isn't that cute? I mean, God wasn't really threatened, but then he looked at one thing, and they really were very clever. They figured out how to make bricks, and they figured out that they were stronger when they were fired. That's tremendous. They used what God had given them, the abilities, and they used their minds and their brains, and they developed something. I'm sure God thought that was pretty neat. There was just one problem. What was it? What did they use for mortar? Pitch, tar, asphalt. You ever use that for mortar to build a wall? Why not? Doesn't work. It won't work. It's not effective. I think God said, oh, look at that. Oh, brick's good. Mortar lacking. They'll never be able to get far with that. I think God was actually doing them a favor, because if they had succeeded in building the tower very high, very far, I suspect it would have collapsed under its own weight. The mortar that they were trying to use simply wouldn't have worked. Have you ever seen some of the great cathedrals in Europe? What are they built out of? Brick? Not usually. Mostly out of stone. And how many of you know, years later, certainly they did it during the Middle Ages, and they discovered in Egypt some of the great building projects. Later on, others learned how to use stone and how to dress it so efficiently, so effectively, that they didn't even need to use mortar. But they used stone. And over in Israel, they thought that that was the only proper building, the only proper material that you would want to use to build. They wouldn't have used bricks. In fact, they mocked others who used bricks. So you really, it's kind of an inside joke here. You can see the Israelites looking, look at those foolish people, those Babylonians. Look at those people over there that use brick. Not exactly the proper material. When you have all this really high quality material that God has furnished himself, we call it stone. So they're kind of, it's kind of an inside joke here that the Israelites are having at the expense of their neighbors. And so I really believe, as you look at this story, that God actually, once again, cares for his creation. He goes, this isn't good. If they get very far, the tower's likely to collapse. People will get hurt. And I think God looked at them and determined that they were already confused. He goes, look, they haven't figured out the right mortar to use. They're already confused. So all God decided to do was to confuse them a little bit more. He just used the building material that they offered him. They were confused, and he said, all right, you're already confused. We'll just magnify that confusion a little bit more to the next level. And so what happened was that he scrambled their languages, and that they could no longer understand themselves. And so when that happened, they were literally scattered. You ever heard that expression, scatterbrained? They didn't know what was up. Suddenly, they couldn't communicate in the effective way that they had before. And because they wouldn't listen to God, now they had trouble listening and understanding one another. How many of you have ever tried to learn a foreign language? How'd it go for you? Some of us pretty well, others, yeah, not so well. Is it easier to learn it from somebody who knows the language, who grew up, and perhaps that's their native language, whether it's German or French or Spanish? Or do you learn it better by listening to tapes? If you have a friend actually from that country, is it easier to learn listening with them? I think probably for most of us it really is. And so what happens, I think one of the reasons God may have scrambled their language was because they wouldn't listen to him. The inference is, well, because you wouldn't listen to me and you've listened to one another, now you're going to have to work really, really hard to understand one another. This isn't a story about speaking. It's a story about listening. They refused to listen to God. So God said, okay, now, if you want to build something, you can. It won't be impossible, but it's going to be a lot more difficult because you refuse to listen to me. Now it's going to be more difficult to listen to one another. He just made it harder for them to communicate. And so I think some of us know that when God asks us to do something, we can do it the easy way, or you can do it the hard way. Too bad Mike Hathaway is not here today, because Mike always says something. He goes, there's the right way, the wrong way, and then the Hathaway. And if you've known Mike, you know exactly what he means. Well, with God, it's much the same thing. There's the easy way, and then there's Yahweh, if we want to say it. There's God's way. And if you want to do it your way, you can, but ultimately God will have his way, and he will get what he wants from us. And so he says, all right, you want to do it the hard way? We can do that. You know, there's an old story, isn't there? You can lead a mule to water, a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Well, I like what somebody said to me one day. Yep, that's true, but you can make them thirsty. How do you do that? Feed them salt. You can make them thirsty. I think that's what God is doing. He scrambles our language. He makes it more difficult. All God ever wanted was to be part of the equation. He didn't want us to go off on our own. He wanted the people to scatter abroad around the world. His purposes will be fulfilled. We can do it the easy way, his way, or God will still get his way. It's just going to be a lot harder on us. How do you like to do things? The easy way, which is God's way, or your way? Your way or Yahweh? That's the story of the Tower of Babel. Let's pray.